Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, I'm answering your questions about the Dodgers postseason roster, the new rules coming to MLB, the pre-arb playoff or pre-arb player bonus pool that was details announced today, and a bunch of other stuff. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now, and then you'll never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time watching or listening, my name is Jeff Snyder. My normal co-host is Vince Semperio, although it's just me today. Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans, just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, but we bring you the smart fans perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. And as I mentioned at the top, this is a mailbag episode. There's actually one thing that's not from the mailbag, but it's some news that came out that we want to talk about. So I'll get to that. It's about the bonus pool for pre-arbitration players. Man, I'm already know I'm going to struggle to talk about that just because the words are hard to say. But we knew about that from the CBA that was agreed upon to end the lockout earlier this year. But we got some more details on how that will be distributed, and there's a little bit of information that's relevant to a Dodger or two, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. But first, I do want to jump into some of your questions, and the big news on Thursday was the new rules that have been agreed upon and will be announced for next year in Major League Baseball. Three big things. They're making the bases bigger, which is not much to say about it. And right now, bases are a square that's 15 inches on each side. They will now be a square that's 18 inches on each side, which it makes things a little bit better. It'll make things a little bit safer. Fewer, Max Muncy type collisions at first base, what cost Muncy the postseason last year. Maybe that doesn't happen. I don't know. It will increase the running game a little bit. And we did get a question about this. Somebody just asking what we think of it. It was Tim at OC Tim 1 just asked what we think of the rules. One of the things Tim specifically mentions is in the pitch clock, one of the little rules in there is that walk-up music. It says the length of batter walk-up music cannot exceed 10 seconds, which I think is already the rule anyway, which is why sometimes you'll hear the walk-up music stop and then Dieter keeps playing it on the organ. He continues it. I think that's because they can only play 10 seconds of the actual walk-up music. But then the rest of this part of the rule says music between pitches is to be limited so hitters aren't encouraged to leave the box. That'll be interesting to see how much that affects the Dodgers, because the Dodgers, Dieter does play a lot of stuff on the organ in between pitches. There's always some sound between pitches, and realistically, the pitch clock is going to be 15 seconds. 15 seconds when there's nobody on base and 20 seconds when there is somebody on base. And that will be, there's exceptions to that for pickoff throws and everything. The clock starts when the pitcher has the ball. There's a lot of details. Overall, I am strongly in favor of the pitch clock. I mentioned this on Twitter. I was watching on Wednesday a kid named Louis Varland for the Twins making his major league debut against the Yankees. And it was fun to watch because he gets the ball and he's ready to go again and he pitches. You could tell that he came up through the minor leagues with a pitch clock. And, I've been to a couple minor league games this year. And, it just moves more quickly because pitchers get the ball and they pitch. And I love it. I love baseball more than anybody I know. I'm not in favor of any removing of baseball. I actually have seen proposals from people saying baseball's too long. They should cut it to 7 innings. Like, no, don't cut out actual baseball. There's so much non-baseball stuff you can cut out. Like guys stepping out of the box and the pitcher, you know, walking around the mound and just taking forever. It takes forever. And, you know, people say, don't mess with baseball. It's perfect. Well, yeah, but it was also perfect when I was a kid and games were a half hour shorter than they are now. Baseball will always be perfect as long as you don't mess with the actual baseball. And a pitch clock doesn't mess with the actual game of baseball. It just messes with the non-baseball stuff that kills time. So I am so in favor of that. The other big rule was a restriction on the shift. And basically it says that a minimum of 4 players must have both feet completely in front of the outer boundary of the dirt, and 2 fielders have to be entirely on either side of second base. Basically, infielders got to be in the infield dirt, 2 on each side of second. A couple little caveats there. One is that the dirt isn't actually standardized. You know, a lot of the dimensions of the field are laid out in the rule book, what they have to be. That part is not. And so either they're going to have to, I think there are some guidelines, and, you know, it's not like a team is going to go out and totally reconfigure their infield. Oh, we're pulling out 3 feet of grass because we want our infielders to be able to play a little bit deeper. But I assume that Major League Baseball will be setting some ground rules on that and making, you know, maybe even making it standardized and saying, you got to plant 6 more inches of grass because yours is 6 inches deeper or whatever. So it was kind of interesting that they're doing a rule based on something that's not standard. That's okay. It also says a minimum of 4 players besides the pitcher and catcher, which means it does leave things open for the possibility of a 5-man infield. You know, if you wanted to bring in an outfielder, you know, if you still want to get the benefits of the shift, you know, you could even, you know, you could bring your right fielder in and play him with a left-handed pull hitter up, play your right fielder where the second baseman has been playing these days, you know, 25 feet out onto the grass where he can still catch a grounder and throw the guy out at first. And then you could just shift your center fielder and left fielder over, you know, or just bring your left fielder over to play that rover position. The difference is that leaves your outfield wide open now because you have to have 2 infielders on the left side of the infield. And so while, yes, you could still play somebody in that rover position, if the person does go the other way, you know, if Cody Bellinger comes up and sees, oh, they're playing somebody in the rover, that means there's literally nobody in left field. You poke a ball over the third baseman's head and it's a triple. And so maybe an inside the park home run with Cody Bellinger's speed. So it's a loophole, but I think it's one that they deliberately left there because it would make things more exciting. You know what? More triples inside the park home runs would be more exciting. It would be a fun little strategy. And I think we will see it sometimes when the game's on the line, you know. Yeah, you know what? Let's, like you do sometimes now, you see a 5-man infield and they're playing with 2 outfielders saying, we got to get a ground ball here. So overall, I didn't really have strong opinions on whether or not they should ban the shift. It's always been something I feel like I should have a stronger opinion because I do care a lot about baseball. But I was like, okay, if they ban it, I'm okay with that. If they don't, I'm okay with that. But now that they are going to be banning it, I'm okay with it, which I guess is what I just said. I'd be okay with it. There is a big part of me that misses when I was a kid, a line drive up the middle was a base hit. And I miss that sometimes. I miss it more when it's the Dodgers hitting a line drive up the middle. I really enjoy when the other team hits a line drive up the middle and it turns into a double play. But you know, when the Dodgers hit it, I miss that being a hit. But I don't think that's necessarily going to go away because you just have to have 2 guys on either side of second base. So you're still going to have against left-handers, you're still going to have the shortstop probably shaded basically right up the middle, just, you know, 3 inches to the shortstop side of second base. Although for me, the bigger impact is the fact that you can't play an infielder back on the grass that deep. And so that's where you're going to have traditional holes. You pull a ball between the first baseman and the second baseman, that's going to be a hit instead of what we have right now, where that is a ground out to shallow right field. So I'm excited about that. I still don't have strong feelings about whether I think it's a great idea. But I'm excited to see how it works. And then the last thing that I started with, the bases being bigger, I think it'll increase the running game a little bit. I think it will make things a little bit safer. and overall be a non-issue. I've watched minor league games with the bigger bases, didn't even notice it. And, but you know, if they think it's important, great. I'm willing to go along with that. So, I'm going to get to more of your questions in a minute. I'm also going to get to that talk about the pre-arbitration player bonus pool. Hey, I did it. Awesome. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. Hey guys, it's time to talk about a delicate subject. Are you struggling to get that big hit with runners in scoring position? Is your closer having trouble finding the strike zone? If you can't tell, those are euphemisms, and this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, we all know that confidence can take you far in life. That's especially true in the bedroom, especially when it's time to step up to the plate. That's where Blue Chew comes in. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Look, if I can talk about this on a podcast that my mother and my son both listen to, you can have a private online conversation with a licensed medical provider you don't see at the dinner table. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. They always say first impressions are important, but what about lasting impressions? So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, chew it and do it. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code Locked On at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast. All right, I am back. I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. It really does mean a lot to us. And yeah, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do it now. If you are watching on YouTube, we'd love to hear your comments in the comments section. If you're listening on the podcast, you know, if you're driving, I don't want you to, you know, tweet at us right now because you should keep your eyes on the road. But, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Twitter. We're at Locked On Dodgers. I'm at Snydog. Vince is at Vince Samperio. I'll give you all that stuff again at the end of the episode. We love hearing from you guys wherever it is. So thanks for being a part of this with us. It means a lot to us. All right. I want to talk a little bit about this pre-arbitration player bonus pool. If you remember, that was one of the things that they went back and forth on proposals during the lockout. The union wanted a much bigger pool for these pre-arb players, and the owners wanted a much smaller pool. They ended up settling at $50 million, which is a pretty decent amount. And it's basically, I guess I'll explain what a pre-arb player is. If you're not familiar, pre-arbitration means after your third year of service, almost everybody, after 3 years of service, you then get 3 years of what's called your arbitration years, where your salary is determined by an arbitration panel based on your actual performance in previous years. And so this bonus pool is for those people in those first 3 years who haven't yet reached arbitration. So they're making the league minimum or close to it, because in those first 3 years, it's up to the team how much they pay you. Usually it's league minimum your first year, and then a little bit of a raise the second year and a little bit of a raise the next year. But you're not making really good money until you hit arbitration. So there's an opportunity for those guys between 0 and 3 years of service to qualify for a bonus. And there's two ways you can qualify, either by doing well in postseason voting or by being in the top 100 qualifiers in WAR. And it's not the Baseball Reference WAR. It's not the Fangraphs WAR. It's they call it the joint WAR, which is, I assume, kind of a mix of the two. On the Athletics article, they call it J-WAR, and I kind of like that. It just stands for joint WAR, because if there's one thing we need, it's another version of WAR. But anyway, so basically, once the bonuses for people who did well in postseason voting are distributed, then whatever's left of that $50 million is distributed proportionally based on your J-WAR. And in this article, they listed the top 10 qualifiers for that statistical allocation of this bonus money. And one name jumped out. Number 8 is Tony Gonsolin. Now, Gonsolin has a chance to make some decent money. Gonsolin is making, you know, he's making well under $1 million this year. You know, the league minimum plus a couple little raises probably. But he could make some decent money because one of the ways you can earn money is by finishing well in the Cy Young voting. You have to finish in the top five to earn a bonus. And I think Tony Gonsolin has a chance to finish in the top five in Cy Young voting this year. It's going to be close, especially with this injury costing him. But I think there are going to be enough people who look at his record, only one loss. You know, he's, 16-1, I think. He might be 17. I don't know. I didn't look. But there's going to be enough people look at that, look at his great ERA, and think, yeah, that guy deserves. I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's going to get very many first place votes considering this injury. But I think he could finish in the top five. And if you finish fourth or fifth in the Cy Young voting, you get a $1 million bonus. That could be huge for Gonsolin. He could make a really good $1 million bonus. And then there's also a bonus for just finishing in the top 100 of those pre-arb players in J-War. It's calculated. And like I said, right now he's eighth best. This says a player who qualifies for multiple awards will only receive the bonus amount associated with the higher value award. But I believe that you can get a bonus for the awards and then and still be eligible for the proportional distribution based on J-War. And so I think if Gonsolin was to finish in the top five in Cy Young voting, he would get that bonus and still get his share of whatever's left of the $50 million. Say there's $45 million left distributed between the 100 top J-War players. That could be, obviously, if it was just divided by 100, that's $450,000 each. But if it's proportional and Gonsolin has the eighth highest, I would guess there could be close to another $1 million available there. I don't think it's crazy to think that Tony Gonsolin could make $1.5 or $2 million in bonuses this year. And for a guy who is making, $700,000+ this year, that's a pretty big chunk of change. And I love this bonus pool thing. I think it's great to give guys an opportunity to earn their money. I think it will help keep, obviously, guys are still signing these long-term team-friendly contracts, but I used to talk about with Ozzy Albies' contract with the Braves. If Albies had been given the opportunity, if Ozzy Albies had already earned $4 million in his career when the Braves came to him after his second year and said, hey, we want you to sign this team-friendly deal, I don't think he would have done it because $4 million is legit money. And knowing, if I have another good year next year, I can earn some more. It will give players a chance to earn this money and by being very good in those pre-arb years, which I think will help everybody kind of even things out and help players get their true value and just make things more competitive all around. I think it's great. I think it's great for a guy like Gonsolin. Will Smith is still pre-arb, I believe. And so he would be eligible. And Alejandro Kirk is number 10th on this list, and Will Smith has got to be right there. So I assume he's just barely out of the top 10. Smith probably won't finish in the top five in MVP voting, and so he won't get a bonus there. But Smith could make close to $1 million maybe in this bonus pool, at least a few $100,000, which is it's a big deal. All of us, everybody listening to this, I'm sure somebody said, hey, I'm going to give you $300,000. You'd say, okay, thank you. So I'm sure Will Smith would take it too. I'm excited about that bonus pool, and nobody did ask a question about this, but it was the other big news of Thursday. And so I want to talk about that specifically because it does apply to Tony Gonsolin, and there will be other Dodger players who it applies to. And I think this offseason we'll probably get more details on who they are and who got how much and all of that. So let's jump into another question really quick before we take our last break. Let's go with Kung Fu Zhao at Thurj_ _ on Twitter asked, what are the best and the worst matchups for the Dodgers in the playoffs? It's a tricky question. There's no real answer. Honestly, I think with this team, the best and worst matchups, it's just how good are the teams. And pitching always plays up. If you have, you know, if Scherzer and DeGrom are healthy for the Mets in the postseason, that's a tough matchup for anybody. And I would rather play the Mets in a 7-game series than in a 5-game series, I think, unless if the Braves do pass the Mets up, so the Mets are one of the wild card teams, then the Mets have to use Scherzer and DeGrom to get through that wild card series, which definitely impacts them. And then you get Taijuan Walker and Chris Bassett in the first 2 games of a 5-game series. So that would be nice. So if the Mets are the wild card team, I'd like to face them in a 5-game series. If not, I'd rather face them in a 7-game series, probably. Other than that, I don't know. Like, it really comes down to who's playing well. You know, the Cardinals don't have any pitching that scares me, but Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado are two of the best hitters in baseball this year. Tommy Edman has been outstanding. Albert Pujols has had a great year. So the Cardinals could be scary. I think the Dodgers could outslug them, but they could be scary. Jack Flaherty's coming back, so if he's effective, who knows if he will be, who knows if he'll be healthy. The Braves have been playing great lately. Obviously they're a very good team. The Dodgers have played them, 3 times in the last 4 postseasons, I think. Any team can beat any team in the postseason. No team really scares me much more than anybody else, except maybe the Mets if DeGrom and Scherzer are healthy. I still think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball and are going to be favored in any series. But really it comes down to, I think, and we're actually going to talk about this in the next segment based on another question, I think the biggest scary thing about the postseason is anything can happen, including with the Dodgers. So I will come back in just a minute to answer a couple more questions from you guys. Thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week's games. BetOnline is also your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Dodger fans, I am back. Want to thank you one last time for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. It really does mean a lot to us. We love talking Dodgers with you, and we encourage you to join the conversation, whether it's in the YouTube comments, on Twitter, on, you know, however you want to reach out to us. We love it. I'll give you all the contact info at the end of this episode. Let's jump into a few more questions that we got from you listeners to wrap this one up. Christian Tyler at Chris_Tyler95. What is the one factor that could end the Dodgers postseason? I'll lump this in with a question from Kevin at BlueGoon82. He says, it seems like the biggest obstacle for the Dodgers each year is being healthy enough for the playoffs. Injuries and tax players were a thing last year too. What can the Dodgers do in the future to avoid this? 6-man rotation, more load management, etc. And yeah, Christian, I feel like the answer to your question might be in Kevin's question. The big factor that could end the Dodgers postseason is health, really. Obviously effectiveness, but, you know, I know Trey Turner struggled in the postseason last year. I really don't think that's indicative of, oh, he must be bad in the postseason. I don't think that mostly exists. Corey Seager was terrible in the postseason until 2020 when he was the best player ever. Cody Bellinger was terrible in the postseason 2017. He's had some very big postseason moments. I don't think, for the most part, I think most guys who have been bad in the postseason, it was because they didn't get enough opportunities to have their good first or to finally have a good postseason. Barry Bonds was terrible in the postseason. And then in 2002, he was the best player ever. There may have been something behind that, but yeah, you get what I'm saying. So I think it comes down to health. And last year, as Kevin points out, the Dodgers had some injuries. They lost Clayton Kershaw and Max Muncy in the very last series of the regular season. That's hard to overcome. And The one thing I would quibble with Kevin, because as Kevin knows, there's not much I enjoy more than quibbling with him, is that he kind of has the implication that the Dodgers are having issues right now, that health will be an issue in 2022. And I'm not convinced that's the case, because right now, yeah, Tony Gonsolin's on the injured list. If he comes back and is healthy, that's great. And he's going to be just fine. They don't really have, they have some relievers on the injured list, but they also have a lot of good relievers on the active roster. I'm assuming Gratterall will be back. I'm hoping Almonte will be back. And it's kind of, you know, if you get those three guys back, Gonsolin, Gratterall, and Almonte, and the other, the position players stay healthy, really it comes down to effectiveness. And so I think the Dodgers have actually done a pretty good job this year of load management, or whatever you want to call it, keeping guys fresh, keeping guys rested. And, you know, Clayton Kershaw had a really interesting quote that Fabian Ardaia talked about. He quoted him on Twitter. I wonder if I can find it really quick. I should have looked for this before I started talking about it, you know? That would have been a good idea. But he said, oh, scrolling, I'm almost there, I'm sure. Clayton Kershaw put the Dodgers September succinctly. Kershaw said, we're trying to get ready for the postseason, but also to try to win the game. Sometimes those mirror each other and other times they don't. So it's a little bit more challenging at times. For me personally, it's just win the game. And I think that's kind of the case. That's, you know, some Mets fans got on us. They found our podcast on YouTube after one of the Mets series games. And, you know, when Vince and I were talking about how the Dodgers' biggest priority isn't winning right now, winning this game, it's winning in October. And some of these Mets fans called us out on that, said we were making excuses. And somebody said, every player tries to win every game. And I appreciate them calling me out. I always appreciate being called out. There have been times when I've said things wrong on this podcast that didn't come out right. And it wasn't until somebody called me out on it, I said, oh yeah, I could have worded that better. Here's what I actually meant. But in this case, I think we're absolutely right, because we never said the players aren't trying to win. And what Kershaw's saying is, when you're in the game, yeah, you're trying to win. You're trying to do your best. But it's more a management thing. Okay, today we're going to bat Joey Gallo, Chris Taylor, and Cody Bellinger three in a row, even though there's a good chance that they're all going to strike out. You know, that's the thing where they're trying to get guys ready. We're going to keep throwing Craig Kimbrel out there in weird situations, you know, in a 10-3 game, in a one-run game, and because we're more interested in getting Kimbrel right for October than winning this game right now. All of those things, it's more management decisions. But yeah, once the players are in the game, they're trying to win. And so I think it's up to Dave Roberts and the front office to put guys in situations where they're not going to hurt themselves or get unhealthy for the purpose of winning a game right now. And we saw it on Wednesday. And I think we talked about this on yesterday's episode a little bit, that Kershaw came out of a game after six innings, a one-run game, only had thrown 86 pitches, and he came out with a smile on his face. That is a guy who is focused on October and understands, yeah, when I'm in the game, I'm going to do everything I can. And Kershaw pitched great when he was in the game. And now, okay, I'm out of the game because I am focusing on the postseason. And it's a delicate balance, like Kershaw said. But I think the Dodgers done a really good job this year, Kevin. And so I'm hoping they will be healthy, because I don't know that there's much they can do in the future to avoid it other than what they've been doing. Sometimes it's just a bad luck thing. And the Dodgers last year had terrible luck on the injury front, you know, losing those two guys in the last weekend of the regular season, having Max Scherzer unable to take the ball in the postseason. You know, a lot of things went wrong for the Dodgers, and I think some of it might have just been bad luck and not the result of anything they did. Kevin had one other question that I liked. He said, Tyler Anderson is good enough to be a starter in a four-man playoff rotation, but he's also very comfortable coming out of the bullpen. Should he be a part of the piggyback tandem in the playoffs? If so, who's he coming in after? And yeah, for me, if everybody's healthy, I think the four-man rotation should be in some order. I'm not going to try to put them in order. I'm going to say Julio, Kershaw, May, and Gonsolin in some order. And realistically, that order is probably Julio, Kershaw, Gonsolin, May, in that order. And then you have Tyler Anderson available out of the bullpen. I don't think it would be a standard piggyback. Okay, we're going with Dustin May for four innings and Tyler Anderson for four innings. I think it would be Anderson being ready, because sometimes, you know, even I don't think you have to overplan that. Just say, we know that we have Tyler Anderson available for four innings or three innings or, you know, whatever it is. Andrew Heaney, we have him available to face nine hitters and not a single one more. As we talked about the other day about his issues out on the second time through the order, you know, having those two guys who can give you multiple innings says, you know what? Yeah, Dustin May, you're still fresh back from Tommy John. You gave us four great innings. That's good enough. Or you gave us five great innings. That's good enough. And you know, not having to push Dustin May to go seven innings, not having to push Clayton Kershaw even to go seven innings. Kershaw probably will be ready to go seven innings if he can be efficient. But, you know, all these guys, you never know who might need a break. Gonsolin will be coming off the injured list. Who knows how stretched out he'll be. And so I think having Anderson and Heaney available in the bullpen would be a really good thing for this team. And then last question, Kershaw at Kershianity said, is Bellinger cooked? I was looking at some video of his from his first few years, and he had a lot more meat on his bones back then. Is he just weak now? Bellinger's first couple of years, he actually fluctuated on weight quite a bit. There was, you know, he bulked up in the offseason, and the next year he's like, oh, he slimmed down in the offseason because he felt like he had gotten too bulky. I don't know that his success was really related to being bulky or not bulky. I think Bellinger still has plenty of strength. I do think the shoulder surgery sapped him of some of his power, but really his big issue is putting the bat on the ball. You know, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, his worst numbers are whiff rate, you know, contact rate, those things. The average exit velocity, the max exit velocity, they're down from a couple years ago. But even that could just be a quality of contact thing. You know, if you're swinging and missing, you're probably also mishitting plenty too. And so I think for Bellinger, I don't know that it's anything about his size or his strength. I think it's just being able to put the bat on the ball, because we've seen him still hit some big home runs, some long home runs. He's still got a ton of power. It's more a hitting thing. And so as for the question, is he cooked? I don't know. But I don't think it's weight related if he is, if that makes sense. I think that's going to do it for today. We did get a couple other questions that we didn't get to, but I'm already over the time that I'm supposed to go. I really appreciate all your questions. They mean a lot to us. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out the Locked On MLB podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan brings humor, passion, and unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. If you're not watching or listening to Locked On Dodgers every day, please add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the show or who love the Dodgers, please tell them about the show. Maybe they'll like it. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, we'd love to hear your comments, any questions you have in there. I do try to read the comments pretty regularly. I try to respond as much as possible. It's hard to, but I do read them. And so if you have, you know, thoughts, if you think we're wrong about something, you think we're right about something, we'd love to hear that. If you're listening on the show, hit us up on Twitter. You know, you can add us, you can DM us. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. And like I said, the DMs are open in all of those places. You can also email us, lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.